Sometimes it's easy to think of small Midwestern towns as an endangered species, but they are still home to millions of people. This hour, hope for small towns in the 21st century. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'll talk with Julianne Couch, author of The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. For the book, she wrote about 9 different small towns, including Emmitsburg and Bellevue, Iowa. Later in the hour, another search for hope. In the face of all the environmental challenges we're facing as a planet, it's easy to become a doomsayer. I'll talk with 2 environmental science students at Luther College who decided to go looking for hope. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, the theme is hope. It's easy to feel like combating climate change is a lost cause, but I'll talk with 2 environmental studies students at Luther College who went searching for hope in a field with a lot of bad news. But first, we're going to look for hope in small town Iowa. Julianne Couch is author of The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. For her book, she wrote about 9 different small towns, including Emmitsburg and Bellevue, Iowa. And she is with me now. Hello, Julianne.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it's great to be here.
Now, tell me a little bit about your personal interest in small towns, because this is not a book that grew out of a research project. This is a book that grew out of personal experience and your own love for small town life. So tell me a little bit about your background.
That's right. Well, I suppose you could say it came out of my own personal research project in a way, because I was born in the Midwest, born in Kansas City, and then moved to Laramie, Wyoming in the early 90s. And eventually, long, boring story, but decided, you know what would be fun? Would be to move to Iowa. And so my husband, bless his heart, was along for the ride on that one. And it was a sort of a drawn-out process. A couple of years transpired between that thought and actually arriving here. And in between, there was a lot of back and forthing, and I came to realize that really that the strip of land between the Rocky Mountains and the Mississippi River were really the place where I felt at home. And a lot of it I hadn't actually been to, but that was just, you know, that was my kind of my beat, to speak in journalism terms, but also where my heart was. And I realized that to really understand an area, reading about it is good and that sort of thing, but you really just have to go there and stand on the intersection and watch people drive by to really get a sense of place. So like any good, you know, neurotic writer, I thought I need to develop a plan and sketch out a path and go to places and visit with people and see what was happening on the turf in select areas of this big swath that I call home.
Well, and you specifically call home Bellevue, Iowa now, which is a fairly small town and an unusual place to move to. When you meet people who are new to the state, if you're a person who lives in Iowa and you meet people who are new to the state, you do usually meet them in the university towns in Cedar Falls or Ames or Iowa City or Des Moines, people who are drawn to the state because of careers, because of jobs. Mm-hmm. What drew you to Bellevue?
So I was in Iowa anyway, researching my previous book about electrical energy, because I'm a nerd. And so we were in Nevada. Uh-huh. And I thought, boy, it's been a really long time since I've been to see the Mississippi River, and I've always loved the Mississippi. And so we said, well, my husband was with me on this trip, so let's go over to Dubuque and spend a couple days and just, you know, putter around. And just did that loop drive along the eastern side of the river and then across the bridge and then back up. And I thought, what a pretty place. And I did not know that people could live like that in a nice little, this little river town. And just, I'm drawn to natural beauty as kind of my main motivator of why I make decisions. And it just seemed perfectly logical to leave everything I knew and and move there. But there were also practical reasons. I knew I could work from anywhere as a writer, as a teacher. And Bellevue had the infrastructure in place and some other things in place that made that possible for me to do.
And to be connected to the rest of the world in your work.
Yeah.
Well, and it's probably, I don't know, as an Iowan and someone who loves this place so much, it always makes me feel good when somebody who has lived in the mountains comes here and sees our beauty and appreciates it. Because I'm sure a lot of your friends in Wyoming, when you said you were moving to Iowa, said, what? Yeah. Why? For what?
Yep. Yeah, for the flatlands, I just tell them. For the flatland, flat private land.
So as you were making this move, you probably saw a lot of small towns. Was there something in particular that made you think, I need to explore small town life in the 21st century? What sparked this?
Well, I guess the most direct way to get to that is to talk about something I also wrote about in the introduction about hearing how the rural Midwest, particularly, is no longer relevant in the national conversation. That kind of got my hackles up a little bit.
Right, and you start off with talking about Katie Couric saying, you know, the caucuses are in Iowa. Why? Iowa doesn't look like the rest of the nation, which is something that we hear a lot every 4 years. Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely right. And Katie Couric, if you're listening, and I hope you are, I love you. I love her.
Well, I kind of hope she's listening now, too.
I do.
But, you know, so your argument is, okay, you know, there is something to that. Iowa doesn't necessarily look like other places in the country. But you also think, wait a minute, although people are moving toward the cities and cities are growing, small towns are shrinking, there are still a lot of people in small towns and in rural areas in the Midwest. So make that case for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was something like 47 million or some number like that, according to the latest Census Bureau, latest a couple years ago now. But that's a pretty substantial figure. And the Census Bureau also had, or Department of Agriculture, I think, has this long formula for where you live and how many minutes it takes you to get to significant markers of population. Like if you're half an hour from a town of 10,000, you're extremely frontier and rural. If you are half an hour from a town of 100,000, you're really not far from things at all. And they've actually got a four-level scale that they use to chart this stuff. And I thought, well, you know, if they're studying it to that degree and making policy decisions based on how many people are affected by their decisions around transportation, around policy, around infrastructure, broadband, all that sort of stuff, the people who live in those level three and level four far areas need a voice. And I thought, well, I'm one of those sort of responsibility advocacy champion journalist types. And so I thought, well, I can do that. I'm independent. I can write about what I want and do what I want. And that was sort of a cause that I took up to champion.
Well, and a lot of the stories that we hear about small towns in Iowa and in other places in the Midwest, ever since the 1980s and the farm crisis, we hear over and over, small towns are dying. Mm-hmm. The death of the small town. Over and over, we hear those stories. And of course, some places are in trouble. Some places are thriving. But you chose to specifically look for resilience and hope. And I'd love for you to read something from your introduction about what that means to you.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. Get going here. So I'll just explain what I was writing about when I come to introduce this passage, and I'm talking about small towns who, you know, people are there because they want to be, and people don't do things 100% with only one reason motivating everything they do. But generally, they're there, they want to be, they're okay, things are fine. This small town, if a new family comes in, everyone is happy. If that family leaves, it's a down thing for the community. Individuals count quite a bit more in a small place than they do in a large place. So I write, a core of people stays in place and maintains. There's a trait that town leaders and everyday residents have in common. They take what remains and make do. In spite of downturns or difficulties, they make it work, whether because of duty or fear of letting down previous or future generations or of letting themselves down. To me, that's resilience. The late Elizabeth Edwards is often quoted as saying, resilience is accepting your new reality, even if it's less good than the one you had before. I would add to that definition a collective sense, thinking about how a place accepts its new reality of shrinking populations or hard economic times or both. Yet resilience of place doesn't exist if people see themselves simply as inhabitants there. It exists if people see themselves as stewards, understanding they are responsible for knowing the place's story, its challenges, and striving to keep the collective porch swept. If they don't see themselves in that way, those trips to bigger cities might be one-way trips. A town that doesn't come together to plan how to keep the doors open and then see those plans through is likely to falter and lose population to the point it cannot be sustained.
That's Julianne Couch reading from her book, The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. So you decided you wanted to write about small towns at this moment and look for that resilience and look for that hope. You wrote about 9 different communities. How did you decide what towns you were going to write about?
That was a very fun thing. So I knew when I moved to Bellevue that one of the ways I could rationalize that maniac kind of
right.
a choice was, well, I'll write about it. I know I'll be writing about this, so it's okay to do it. So I knew I was going to write about Bellevue and the sort of my reverse migration back to the Midwest. So, but while I was at it, you know, I was thinking about all those places in between, as I mentioned. And so when I knew I would write about, not Laramie because it's too large, but a little mountain town right outside of that the Bill Centennial. In between, I wanted to go to the places I spent a lot of time driving around. So that was Nebraska, Missouri, my native state of Kansas, and Iowa. Is that 5? So I thought I went small. So the biggest place I went to was about 4,000, which was actually Emmitsburg. I knew I wanted geographic diversity within the state. So, you know, where I live in Bellevue is on the Mississippi River, so I wanted someplace kind of on the other side of the
state.
Right,
you went all the way to northwestern Iowa.
Mm-hmm. In other states, you know, same kind of a deal with a variety of geographic diversity. Also, like, for example, in Emmitsburg, I thought, well, it probably would be about the same size as Bellevue, but it has a community college. And what difference does that make? It has a casino. And what does that add? So that was sort of why I chose that. In all cases, it needed to have a place where I could be, you know. So does it have a community weekly paper? That helps a lot, yeah. Does it have a place where I can just drive into town and walk in some public space and sit? You know, does it have a library? Does it have a cafe? Does it have a motel where I can stay? Because I didn't want to be, you know, driving in and out for 20
right.
miles. Because I went to all these places and spent, you know, some time there. And some cases, it just helped to have somebody who would reach out to me, because I didn't know anybody in any of the towns at all except for Centennial and Bellevue when I started this.
Were you only looking for towns that you considered to be resilient, that were doing well?
No. I had no idea. I really only looked at the map, and like I would search at the read a little bit about the town. Like there, most towns have a website, so I could make sure, does it have a paper? Does it have those things? I did not cherry pick to suit a thesis that I was trying to develop. And I write about a lot of towns that are, you know, a lot of places I write about are having issues.
Right, right. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is Julianne Couch. Her book is The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about hope. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk about finding hope in the face of all of the environmental challenges that we're facing. I'll talk with 2 students from Luther College who went looking for hope. Also, right now, we're talking about hope in small towns. We know that small towns all over the Midwest are facing a lot of challenges. My guest is Julianne Couch. She's the author of the new book, The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. And she wrote about 9 different small towns and some of the very special things about each one of those communities. And we were just talking before the break about how you found those communities, and you just kind of did research. You had some basic things basic requirements that had to be met so that you could do your job. You could actually get in and find people and find out about the town. None of them were over 4,000 people.
Correct.
All right. So when you picked a town, and you can pick the first one that you went to, when you picked a town, you went, and what did you do? How did you start to try to get to know the town? Because it can be hard to be an outsider in a small town.
Oh, yeah. I'll talk about Emmitsburg because that was such a hodgepodge of ways that that came about. So, you know, I wanted to make some comparisons between Bellevue and another community, and one that had a community college and a casino and some other aspects that would draw people in, but it's still a fairly small town. It's off the highway. You have to work to get there. That was another sort of important thing. No exurban ring communities or I-80 type
places. Right, and there couldn't be a Walmart or anything.
There could not be a Walmart. Right. Apologies to Walmart. But
I think they're okay.
I wanted to be the place that had to – anyway. So Emmitsburg, I sort of was scoping that out as a possibility. Friend of the show, Mary Swander, I believe, mentioned that to me as having a good college town vibe because I told her I was looking for someplace. And so there was a LinkedIn group for Iowa, just for Iowa, I think. And so I posted something on this LinkedIn group and said, does anybody know anybody in Emmitsburg? I'm kind of trying to do this. And 10 minutes later, I got a message from a gentleman he says, I work for Iowa Lakes Community College. What do you need? And so that was my way in. He introduced me to several individuals that I could contact. That has upsides and downsides. The upsides is that you are legitimized and people aren't afraid to talk to you. And
right.
Like, what are you doing? You know, people swoop in from the outside, write about communities and get it all wrong. I can totally understand why they would be suspicious and why people would not trust that. But I was able to make that work. I mean, and then but the downside is that you might not find people other than rah-rah community boosters, because that's my job to be that, you know. And so that was a fine line to try to walk as a journalist through all of these stories that I was presenting myself and the stories in as balanced a way as I could, knowing, you know, it's obvious that I'm going to be getting what I'm looking for and I'm going to be getting what people are willing to give me. But to write about it in a way that – you know, makes that obvious.
Right. Well, in looking for resilience and hope, I mean, you also have to see the things that are not working mm-hmm. in these small towns. So let's talk about some of the real challenges that small towns face. And you can give me some examples from some of the many towns that you visited. And, mm-hmm. and of course, one of the biggest problems that small towns face is that it's hard to find work in a small mm-hmm. town. So even if I want to live in this town that I love, if there's no place for me to work, I can't do it.
Right.
And I know that some of the towns that you visited really, really struggled with that. So what mm-hmm. were some of the things that you saw along those lines?
Well, sometimes people want to move back to where they were from originally because they've got kids and they want the grandparents and that whole little family group. And that can help if there is some sort of a family entrepreneurship business thing that they can get involved in. I saw a lot of people doing that or starting their own business. Or like me, I'm probably the outlier in this, being that I teach online, my courses online. I'm a writer. I can do that stuff from home with a good internet connection. But some people in some small towns could not do that, even if they wanted to, because their broadband is not adequate. So that's a problem. Some people are willing to drive. They think nothing of getting up in the morning, putting in an audio book or turning on a public radio station
right.
and getting on the interstate and doing it. I would rather put ice picks through my ears than do that.
Right.
I just couldn't.
To spend that much time in the car every day.
But some people, it's fine. You know, they like the drive. It relaxes mm-hmm. them.
Well, and you also find families where one person has to drive. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just all there is to it. One mm-hmm. person has to drive away from mm-hmm. the community to work to support the lifestyle of mm-hmm. living in that community. Mm-hmm.
And they find the trade-off worthwhile, or they wouldn't do it. I mean, you can be in a very large city, obviously, and your job can be 45 miles, minutes away. Maybe it's only 10 miles, but you're still driving. It just somehow doesn't feel as, like, committed, like, now I'm behind the wheel and I'm going to be here until I get, you know, way that far away. It's a little bit different, but people make trade-offs every day in their life, and it's just nice to see people believe that they can make a small town work for them if that's what they want.
Right. Well, and of the people who were willing to go to some great lengths to make that work, what did they say? What's the reason? Why make those sacrifices just so you can live in a small town?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's the perception thing, which isn't necessarily borne out in reality, but if it's a perception, then it's real enough for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that is more relaxing, feeling of safety, a feeling that their children are going to get a better education because the teachers give them personal care, the feeling that when their children are walking the streets, they've got 2,000 sets of eyes on those kids instead of, you know, nobody, which is true in my town. My gosh, if I was a kid in my town.
You can't get away with anything, huh?
No, I can't get away with anything. You know, so those sorts of things. And then what I mentioned earlier about often there's family, generational family there. Like, again, with Bellevue, there's, you know, there are transients there. There's sort of an expatriate population from Chicago that for some reason lives there. But it's mostly four and five generation Bellevue or Jackson County families. And that's a case of that's what makes that town stable. I think other small towns that are more transient based might not have that in this sort of social infrastructure, right, to allow people to fit in.
Well,
and that.
And Bellevue has that natural beauty, just mm-hmm. a beautiful, beautiful community. Emmitsburg has the community college, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. So that makes it a center. You were just talking about, you know, people want to live in small town Iowa because the education is great. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, you know, we have terrific school systems in the state of Iowa, but a lot of small towns have lost their school mm-hmm. through school consolidation. That doesn't mean the schools are bad,
right,
but it does mean it's not three blocks away from the house. It's not in the community. In your travels, what does that mean for a community if they don't have a school?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a very big issue, and I know that the school consolidation is a financial imperative, but I think it can be really the thing that leads to death. If you lose your school, then you've lost, you know, then you lose the grocery, then you lose the post office, and it's just a succession where everything is 15 miles away, which isn't the end of the world, but your town ceases to be a place in the sense that it was before. I write about a town in Missouri called Tarkio, and they lost a college, and they lost a packing plant. The college closed in the early 90s, and, you know, imagine Iowa City with just a big hole in the middle, basically, with full of decaying homes that no one has lived in for 20 years because there's nowhere, you know, there's not
nowhere
the population.
To work.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but of course, you know, people I talked to there said, you know, they're being very proactive about that, trying to get something into that school, even if it's, you know, kind of a non-traditional business. They're saying, you know, they're ready to give the place away, but to other schools, and schools will say the only problem is there's no place for our students to work. So you've got a college town with no jobs because that went.
Right.
And then the school people say, well, you know, all they have to do is get in their car and drive 30 miles to the next town for jobs. College kids, I don't think we want that happening. So so what they are trying to do instead at the community school level is embrace the county and not be about small town football rivalries as much as, you know, how do we make this a place but on a slightly larger scale?
Right.
And
although
I think
counties are big.
Counties
that's
can
a lot
be
of
big.
Driving.
Counties can be big. In Iowa, they're not very big, but yeah.
I'm talking with Julianne Couch. Her book is The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. Now, one of the things when people say, you know, Iowa shouldn't have the caucuses because it doesn't look like the rest of the nation, one of the things that they are saying is that we lack racial diversity mm-hmm. or ethnic diversity mm-hmm. in this state. Now, of course, in our larger communities, we are increasingly diverse. In our small towns, some small towns mm-hmm. are. Most small towns are not. Mm-hmm. And for example, you have Bellevue, mm-hmm. which is not a diverse
nope.
community. If it's not growing in diversity, is that a sign that things are stagnating?
I don't know if it's I wouldn't say that it's stagnating because businesses are continuing to evolve. One business closes. We're getting somebody in the town is starting up a microbrewery or a nano mm-hmm. brewery. So there's constant change. So to me, the fact that there's constant stirring of the waters means it's not a stagnation issue. The diversity of the small town Midwest is non-existent, not just in Bellevue, but in the rural portions of it. It really kind of is. And might be the lack of job opportunities. It might just be that there's better places where people want to be in communities where they're, you know, comfortable and have family.
Right. Well, and let's talk about the downside of that, because I mean, when you talk about Bellevue, you talk about people talking about how it's safe. You know, mm-hmm. doors aren't locked. Mm-hmm. You can leave your keys in the car mm-hmm. if you want to. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us who grew up in rural Iowa, we know that feeling mm-hmm. of safety and security. But can that also breed a sort of distrust of, quote, outsiders mm-hmm. and maybe even an environment that could lead to racist tendencies?
Yes, I think so, too. There's a danger when you've got too much group cohesion that you assume that people will tolerate or not even notice exclusionary behavior. That, like, oh, I'm going to make this sort of off-color joke and I hope I don't offend anyone. And then looking around the room and seeing no one who's obviously in the category of person that you're targeting with the joke and feeling like it's okay. You know, that's the sort of thing that can, you know, when you've got too many people who are alike, can be something to definitely to watch out right. for.
So of the communities that you visited, what did you see as the real strengths? I mean, you write a lot about the beauty and the neighborliness, mm-hmm. the fact mm-hmm. that you can know people and be a part of the community and there's that kind of support. What were some of the real strengths that you saw in the communities that you visited?
The people there are either individually or in more of a strategic city council government-y kind of a way, willing to invest in themselves. I'm getting my towns all scrambled up right now. Bridgeport, Nebraska, out in the Nebraska Panhandle, town of about, I don't know, 1,200, 1,500, something like that, has a beautiful new community recreation center with a pool and the whole thing. Of course, there's going to be some people who say, well, if we shouldn't have bought this, or now we've paid our taxes and now we have to pay $3 to get in and that's too expensive. So there's always some murmuring about how things play out. But by and large, that was a community that was willing to invest in itself. And it was able to do that because before that happened, the community did a lot of work on strategic planning. They got together, they surveyed people sort of almost ad nauseum, survey. What do you want? What can we do? What needs to go? What needs to stay? What are your concerns? And based on all of that, then presented this plan. Let's tax ourselves. You say that the kids need more to do. Let's tax
give them
ourselves.
Something to do.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they could then go back when people had discontent mm-hmm. and say, this is what most of the people in the community said they wanted. And so we feel comfortable that we're not a government run amok.
Now, I'm also scrambling the towns, but I can't remember. One of the city planners or someone involved in city planning that you talked to said, we cannot be content with the status quo. Maintaining the status quo is a fallacy mm-hmm. that we have to be planning. We have to be moving forward. And if we are not, this town will not succeed.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So that was a pattern that you saw again and again. I mean, it sounds like building a community center could actually replace what you might have lost with a consolidated school district.
Right. That's a good point. And in fact, in Tarkio, going back to that for a moment, one of the things they've done with the college campus buildings is put in a recreation center. And they hired this young man who is a native from there and spent a lot of time as a road warrior driving, you know, far distances to his job wherever he lived. And they hired him. And he says, now it's the Heartland Recreation Center and Events. He says, I'm the and events. So he plans like these just huge mega, you know, like mud truck things,
right.
and concerts and just all this.
But to give
awesome
a reason to people, there are people
stay
a reason
in
to
stay. Town.
So we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you, how long have you been in Bellevue now?
Just over 5 years.
All right. And a lot of people say it's really hard to move into a small town as an outsider mm-hmm. and to feel like you're part of the community in Iowa. How do you feel? Do you feel like you're part of Bellevue?
Yes. I mean, we both live on a fairly busy street, and we bought a house that was had been a two-apartment rental for 35 or 40 years. So many people had lived there. And so it was a great sort of attraction to watch us struggle to renovate this big old Victorian thing back into single-family home. So that gave us just some notoriety to begin
right.
with. And we were very aware of that what we needed to do was not just sit on the porch or sit inside and watch television. We had to get out, be involved in the community. We're both involved with the Bellevue Arts Council. and just, you know, not just sit there and be a wallflower, but show that you have something to contribute and make friends. And, you know, I think one of the people in the Bellevue chapter who I quote says, you know, if somebody doesn't like you if you come to Bellevue, well, maybe they don't like you someplace else, too. Maybe it's you.
Right. Just do a little soul searching. Okay. So as you've done all of this research and you've visited all of these places, you've seen some of the negatives in small town Iowa. We didn't also talk about drug problems, which can be a real problem in small communities. But when after all of this traveling, how do you feel about the future of rural America, small town Iowa, small town Midwest?
Well, I feel like if you are in a really, really small town, it might be time to you'll see the day when that will go away. It's very possible that your town of 25 people, it's time to disincorporate. I mean, I don't know that the tiniest towns, unless people really have a feeling for that place, have any reason to really. I mean, there's ghost towns for a reason,
right?
all around our country.
Right.
And
yeah. But if people are willing to invest and build a future,
yeah, they can bring it back.
All right. Well, Julianne, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It's been so much fun.
Julianne Couch is the author of The Small Town Midwest, Resilience and Hope in the 21st Century. You can find out more at juliannecouch.com. Coming up in just a moment, we will continue to find hope. We'll look for hope in environmental issues in just a few minutes with two students from Luther College. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.